Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. I appreciated that last segment, all our terrific callers. Coming up on Film Week, we take a break, thankfully, from politics and focus on the movies. We'll hear what our critics think of Renee Zellweger's performance as Judy Garland in the new film, Judy. This is a late-in-life, late-in-career Judy Garland. She's playing in London, trying to get herself out of debt. The same time, she's battling alcoholism. And we'll find out about Zellweger's performance. Also, the animated film Abominable and The Laundromat, new movie starring Meryl Streep and Gary Oldman. But that's just the start. Many more films coming up on Film Week in just about 18 minutes now. But right now I'm joined by former New York Times reporter, journalist Stephen Kinzer. He's senior fellow at the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University. He's author of numerous books, and that's how we've had occasion to have him on Air Talk in the past. His new book, Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Stephen, good to have you with us again.
Great to be back.
So Gottlieb, a remarkable figure. Most of us have heard of the CIA's mind control experiments, but don't know an awful lot about it. LSD was one of the major substances that were used. But tell us about Gottlieb and how he ended up being the leader of this effort.
So Sidney Gottlieb is a completely unknown figure, and MK Ultra only slightly known. That was the code name for this mind control project. And discovering Sidney Gottlieb for me has been a thrilling but also very disturbing process. So he was the CIA's chief chemist, and in that role, through the 1950s, he was in charge of MK Ultra. This was the CIA project aimed at finding a technique for mind control. He spent 10 years trying to figure out if there was some kind of a potion or a pill or a technique that would allow the CIA to control people's minds. The idea behind it was that if this could succeed, all the other CIA successes, like overthrowing the government of Guatemala or overthrowing the government of Iran, would pale into insignificance.
Because you just program your operatives, like in the Manchurian Candidate, to go in and carry out whatever work you needed done.
And then they would forget what they had done. So Gottlieb came up with this idea, as a good scientist might, that you have to do this in stages. He came up with two stages. First thing you have to do is, before you can figure out how to insert a new mind into somebody's brain, you first have to find a way to blast away the mind that's in there. So he spent 10 years using drugs, electroshock, sensory deprivation, and all kinds of extreme techniques, sometimes to the extent of death, trying to find ways to destroy a human mind and a human spirit and a human body.
And this is, 1950s neural knowledge, which isn't a lot. Who were the subjects of these experiments?
There were two groups of subjects. So the first group was inside the United States. In the U.S., Gottlieb favored prisoners, and for obvious reasons. He could control them, and they couldn't get out. So he conducted intense experiments. One of them, for example, was at a federal prison in Kentucky. There, seven African-American inmates were segregated and given triple doses of LSD every day for 77 days. The idea was to find out, does this destroy someone's mind? And of course, the answer is yes, you can destroy minds this way. Outside the United States, Gottlieb's experiments were even more intense. First thing he did was to ask himself, who already has knowledge about this? Who's already looked into ways of destroying human souls and bodies and minds? And the answer they came up with was Nazi doctors who had worked in concentration camps and their Japanese counterparts. So instead of arresting and hanging some of these people, the CIA hired them. And the beginnings of the CIA mind control program were based on experiments that the Nazis had carried out. And in fact, the Nazi doctors themselves came and worked with Gottlieb and his chemists. So while I was researching this book, I visited what I think might be the very first CIA secret prison. It's in a beautiful chalet in Germany that looks like it should be a B&B. The new owner, who's a young German businessman, took me down into the basement, and he told me, in these cells, CIA doctors and chemists carried out extreme experiments which were just the continuation of experiments that had been carried out in concentration camps. And he also told me, the people around here, the older people in the neighborhood, all know what happened here. And they've told me that CIA guys buried the bodies of their victims in the forests around here in places that are now covered up with shopping malls and apartment blocks.
Wow. We're talking with Stephen Kinzer. His new book, Poisoner-in-Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. I mean, it's ironic, isn't it, that Gottlieb himself didn't. His parents were Hungarian Jews, right?
This is one of the many bizarre aspects of Gottlieb's life. So if his parents had not emigrated in the early 20th century, he himself might well have found himself in a concentration camp and been the subject of some of these grotesque experiments. Nonetheless, he didn't seem to have any problem working shoulder to shoulder with those very same Nazi doctors.
Now, at the same time, is the Soviet Union running its program similar to this?
No, but we thought they were. One of the reasons that the CIA went off on this crazy search for something that even Gottlieb in the end admitted was a myth is that a couple of episodes in this paranoid era of the early Cold War led them to believe, mistakenly, that the Soviets not only were searching for the key to mind control, but had found it. So one of these episodes was the trial of a Roman Catholic cleric in Hungary who confessed to crimes that he obviously had not committed, and he looked glazed and spoke in a monotone. The CIA saw this and thought, he's been brainwashed. And in fact, the word brainwash was invented by a CIA propagandist for general consumption, but the CIA then fell for its own fantasy. The second big episode came after the Korean War when American prisoners were released, and it turned out that a number of them had signed statements denouncing the United States or even confessing to war crimes. So how could they have done this? CIA answer was, they've been brainwashed. So this electrified the CIA, and assuming that the Soviets had achieved something which they actually had not achieved, we went off on this very bizarre and intense program, which involved the most intense and extreme experiments on human beings that have ever been carried out by any officer or agency of the U.S. government.
What background did Gottlieb have in this?
Very little. In fact, nobody did at that time. He was a chemist, but he wasn't a psychologist. He hadn't deeply studied the way the mind works. I think that one of the reasons they fell for this fantasy was not just these episodes that I mentioned a moment ago, but also that they'd been essentially conditioned by the books and the movies and the stories they had read. There were all these Edgar Allan Poe and Sherlock Holmes stories about people being hypnotized and going out and carrying out crimes. There were movies like Gaslight and movies about Svengali who could seduce people away from their normal lives. And in their paranoia of the early 50s, I think some of the CIA officers believed that what fiction writers could imagine, science could make real.
Well, and I don't know whether this is urban legend or not, but it was said that the CIA also did experiments into ESP and remote viewing and having people to see if they could, you know, their mind could pick up on events in another room. They couldn't. I don't know if that's true or not, but there was that talk that the CIA was doing all this kinds of stuff.
The imagination of Sidney Gottlieb was vast. He had 149 different, what he called, sub-projects, all aimed at everything from bringing magic into the CIA to finding odd techniques that would allow the brain to reconfigure itself. So Sidney Gottlieb was also the first LSD guru in America. He brought LSD to the United States. And sometimes I wonder, he said later on in life that he had taken LSD himself more than 200 times. And the fact that he came up with all these bizarre and extreme experiments makes me wonder, did he actually come up with some of these ideas while he was tripping?
We're talking with Stephen Kinzer, journalist. He's at Brown University's Watson Institute. And his new book, Poisoner-in-Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. We're going to talk about how Gottlieb could have compartmentalized his approach in a way that he could so objectify the people who were the subjects of these terrible experiments. We'll talk about what was learned as well. We'll be back in 1 minute on Air Talk. I want to take a moment to thank our tremendous AirTalk staff. They just do such dedicated, wonderful work, creative and diligent. And they're led by Fiona Eng, our senior producer. Our terrific team also includes Matt D'Angelo-Antonio and Natalie Chudnovsky, who are producers. This week we had help from Lindsay Wright, Caroline Champlin, Itzy Quintanilla, and Matt Bynum. And we've got our news apprentices, Sabrina Fang and Julia Murray, with us as well. And Parker McDaniels with us all this week as our technical director for the program. Right now, we're talking about Sidney Gottlieb, CIA, headed up the MKUltra program, efforts to control the human mind, which were about as horrifying and extreme as you can imagine. The book about Gottlieb is titled Poisoner in Chief. Stephen Kinzer, the author of the book, is with us on Air Talk. Stephen, how could someone whose associates described him as a humane person, a warm person, be so compartmentalized as to be okay with what the subjects endured through these experiments?
This is one of the most fascinating aspects of this unknown figure, Sidney Gottlieb, who I now believe was the most powerful unknown American of the 20th century, unless there was somebody else that was totally
who's unknown
right. and that we don't know about. One of the fantastic aspects of his personality was that although he was directing the most extreme experiments ever administered by any officer or agency of the U.S. government, he also considered himself a deeply spiritual humanist. He lived in an eco cabin with no running water. He meditated with candles. He studied Buddhism. He raised his own vegetables. He got up before dawn to milk the goats. He thought of himself as a real humanist, but yet he, during the day, was carrying out these bizarre, oftentimes fatal and devastating experiments and ruining lives, more or less, for a living. So he had the Jekyll and Hyde thing going in a very big way.
Was this, you think, an ends justifies the means? He sees it, you know, height of the Cold War. If the Soviets are doing stuff like this, it's an existential threat to the U.S. we need to counter?
You're absolutely right. I think that would be the justification, that we're facing now an extreme threat. It's not a normal time. And therefore, we have to put aside our normal goodness as Americans and forget some of the legal and moral and ethical boundaries that we usually respect. And actually, if you look for messages that the Gottlieb era has for today, I think this might be one of them, because sometimes today we're also being told that due to the extreme threats we face, we can't enjoy all the civil liberties that we'd like to think we have.
Stephen, I also wonder about, LSD's how it comes into the counterculture of America. Timothy Leary, I was telling you during the break, I'd interviewed him on the program. And, here's a guy who was a brilliant, Harvard professor and a significant figure. By the time I talked with him, it was like his brain had been wiped. It was just like the LSD over the years, there'd been a heavy price to pay.
So Sidney Gottlieb, the chief CIA chemist, was the first real acid guru. He was fascinated with LSD. In 1953, he persuaded the CIA to spend $240,000 to buy the entire world supply of LSD. He brought it to the U.S. Some of it he used in these extreme experiments that I described. But there was another side to his LSD experimentation. He set up a couple of bogus foundations and through these foundations offered money to clinics and hospitals around the United States to give LSD to volunteers who were told exactly what was going to happen. He wanted to see how ordinary people would respond. Among the very first people who signed up for these experiments were Ken Kesey, who went on to write One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Robert Hunter, the lyricist for The Grateful Dead, who just died this week, who brought LSD to The Grateful Dead. Allen Ginsberg, who took it at Stanford. So these people all then told their friends, you got to try this stuff. Ken Kesey got a job at the Menlo Park Veterans Hospital so he could steal the LSD out of the medicine chest. It was through Sidney Gottlieb's experiments that LSD leaked out into American society. In the irony, of course, is that the drug that Gottlieb thought might be the key to allow the CIA to control people's minds actually wound up fueling a generational rebellion that was aimed at destroying everything the CIA stood for.
Stephen Kinzer, author of Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA's Search for Mind Control. Was there any point at which they started to realize, well, wait, if we destroy someone's brain with all these heavy multiple doses of LSD, what's going to be left for us to rebuild it with the planted mission?
They thought that you could create a void, and into that void, you could insert a new mind. This was something that was obviously a fantasy, and at the end, Gottlieb had to admit it. So his final conclusion at the end of 10 years of experimentation was essentially a dual conclusion. Number one, yes, it is possible to destroy a person's mind with overdoses of drugs and other techniques. Number two, no, it is not possible to insert another mind into the void. You cannot make a person who's deeply opposed to murder go out and commit a murder. That's just a fantasy. And finally, Gottlieb was forced to admit this.
And what happens in 1963 to end the program?
It was ultimately Gottlieb's conclusion that there was no there. You couldn't get there. There was no such thing as mind control. But by then, Gottlieb had taken on this new role as poisoner-in-chief at the CIA. He created the poisons that were supposed to be used to kill Fidel Castro. He created poisons that were supposed to be used to kill Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. Sidney Gottlieb knew more about poison than any American, probably more than anybody in the world. And he used this as a tool to carry out efforts to assassinate people in foreign countries.
So all those different plots that we heard about as freedom of information documents became available, Gottlieb's at the center of this. And he has a Southern California connection?
Absolutely. So not only did he go to Caltech, but later on in life, after he left the CIA, he decided he wanted to become the Sidney Gottlieb that he always thought he was, the gentle, loving humanist. So he signed up to get a graduate degree here at Santa Cruz in speech therapy so that he could help kids who stuttered as he did. Later on, he went on to become a model citizen. He was much respected in his community. But people who knew him later in life said, and I quote this toward the end of my book, that he was obviously troubled. Seymour Hersh, one of the journalists who went out to visit him, told me he was racked by guilt. He was a destroyed man. If he had been Catholic, he would have gone to a monastery. So he had an end that was tormented by what he had done during his life.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for talking with us about the remarkable new book. A lot of research obviously went into this. And the previously untold story of Sidney Gottlieb now comes to print. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
We appreciate it. Poisoner-in-Chief Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Stay tuned. Fresh Air at noon, but Film Week coming up next, of course. Then Fresh Air with Terry Gross at noon. And we're going to continue to bring you coverage from NPR of all the political developments throughout the course of the day. Nick Roman coming on with All Things Considered this afternoon as well. Also, just want to let you know, Monday on Air Talk, we reconvene the Triple Play. A. Martinez, Nick Roman, and me as we talk Dodger baseball. The Dodgers get set for the National League playoffs.